And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick with you for the next 4 hours. Well, kind of, for Willie. You'll be heading to the airport in the final hour after pick six.
I'm going to try to go 7 2/3, then turn it over to
I think you. No, I think actually you're going to get one of those fantasy baseball owners hate. Because of, like, in our league, where you get rewarded heavily for complete games. You know, the 8 1/3 is the worst, right? Or even 8 is the worst. You're, like, so close. Because today, with everything being specialized, if you get that close, you want them to finish it up. Honestly, the worst is 8 2/3. Right? When you see that, I mean, either you're watching or you just look at the stat line, you see 8 2/3, and you're like, you've got to be kidding me. You could not finish out the final out for the complete game. Back then, that wasn't even thought of. It's like, if you've gone that long, you're finishing. Not today. So you're gonna get at least 8 in.
Well, that's pretty good. Yeah, we have a good bullpen.
Today, in today's game, that's good. You'll take it all day. You guys will head to Minnesota to take on the Wild. That'll be a part of pick six. Of course, a lot of NCAA tournament flavor as well. That'll be in the final hour of the program. We'll have to recap, unfortunately, for me. But it's winding down. Winding down. We've had a lot of fun this season with pick six, but it'll be the Wild tomorrow night at 7 o'clock and Winnipeg Sunday night at 6 o'clock. Last night was tough. You knew, and we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and certainly leading up to the game, you knew Toronto was going to be angry. They gave one away in Tampa on Tuesday night. They're up 3-0, up 3-1 going into the third, and they don't even get a point. They lose 4-3 in regulation. You also get your young superstar back in the lineup. So there was a lot of good going the Leafs in their favor last night. And they played out. I mean, they just, as Ryan Ellis said it last night, they were the better team on that night. All good things must come to an end.
Yeah, that's too bad. But it was inevitable. I've been thinking, even on the last road trip.
Right, they're not going to run the table.
I kept thinking, the first one I thought would be, honestly, against Arizona. I was thinking, this is a place that the Predators have rarely played well in recent seasons. And so you're always thinking, when you haven't lost in a while, it's sooner or later you're just going to get unlucky, or you're going to run up against a team that's playing great. I thought it might happen in Arizona. I certainly thought it could happen the following night in Denver when we got in at 3 a.m.
Right.
Against a team that's been lights out at home. And then Buffalo, you always, you know, worry about a letdown. You know, there's always something. You're like, God, at some point they're going to lose. So it's almost a relief in some ways to just get it over with. Okay, fine, they lost. Remember we talked yesterday about when Walter McCarty got hired at Evansville, we were thinking back to the 96 Kentucky team that just dominated everybody. They were fantastic. But they lost the game to Dante Jones and Mississippi State, another team that made the Final Four that year in the SEC tournament. And Rick Pitino said he was relieved. He was like, oh, thank goodness we got that off of our chest. We lost. Now we can really get our edge back going into the tournament. I kind of had that same feeling last night. And Toronto played great. Right from the opening faceoff, they were flying. They've got some great young talent.
They were humming.
Mitch Marner, my goodness, he was just faster than anybody. Mm-hmm. Predators have some fast skaters. Mitch Marner was the fastest skater on the ice last night.
I brought it up in pregame a couple of times. Watch out for Toronto's power play. Especially Marner and Matthews, and then Van Riemsdyk, or as Hal calls him, JVR. JVR hanging out in front.
He was hanging out in front.
Exactly what they did with their two power play goals.
And they caught a break. This is everything came together. You're facing a good team. That good team is playing well. They caught a couple breaks. For example, Van Riemsdyk makes a play in front of the net. He just sort of is trying to shovel it in front of the net. Roman Josi sliding to block the centering pass, and he ends up sort of shoveling it through Pecorine's legs, right? That's just, what are you going to do? That's just an effort play, tough break. Their third goal, now the second goal by Austin Matthews is an incredible play. I'm sure you guys broke that one down. It fooled me at real time. I didn't think he could possibly do that. I thought it must have kicked, it must have deflected back to him. But he reached into a pile of skaters almost like he had a magnet on his stick and just pulled the puck out and just ripped it. It was amazing.
There's a ton of traffic in front. A ton. And he's the one who ended up with it. Again, after his own shot. I was like, how in the world did he pull that? I mean, you know, what are you going to say?
It's almost like he had a hand at the end of his stick. It just could pick up the puck and pull it back. But he did it with the blade, just curled it back and just ripped it. And then the third goal was another sort of lucky break, but the Predators were a little slow to react. It hit a stanchion behind the net on a dump-in. Pecorine thought it was going to come around the other side. It kicked back and landed on the back of the net, and then a huge scramble ensued. So a lot of things come together. You got outplayed against a good team, maybe had a bad break go against you, and the next thing you know, it's 5-1. So move on. But again, exhale. This is going to happen.
Of course.
Let's get it over with. Get it out of your system now. Recoup. Get back on the winning track and finish off the goals of the season.
Peter Laviolette has called his group honest all year. Ryan Ellis was honest after the game. He said, we deserved every second of that. And that's why he's a part of the leadership group. It's bound to happen. Now you start over. Look, when you haven't lost a game in regulation since the middle of February, and it's the end of March, good things have been happening. I mean, that's amazing, really, when you think about it. So now we'll see. And I'll tell you what, it's setting up. And we had this conversation with Mike Rupp yesterday of NHL Network when I said April 1st, Nashville, Tampa, what's going to be on the line for that game? I think we all know.
It's very possible.
Right? I think that game may hinge one way or the other, especially a regulation win by somebody, could tilt the scales for the President's Trophy, right?
I'm going to cross that bridge when we come to it. I still look right now at home ice in the West. I think that's just a lot more important than the President's Trophy because you just don't know who's going to come out of the East. You're going to have, I mean, could Tampa win it? Absolutely.
But could they
could
get
Boston win it?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's about five teams sitting there going, oh, that they could win it. Can Toronto win it after watching them last night? Oh, yeah.
They can.
Right?
But, by the way, those three teams right there are going to be – only one's coming out of the second round. Two will be eliminated by the second round.
That is –
which is, you know, where you go, man. And I'm sure
that's always
the two
my
losing
comeback.
Coaches will be bellyaching about the setup.
Exactly. And they're going to have everybody going, why can't these guys get through the second round?
Let's go back to the old system.
Well, but also just the coach or the team always takes the blame. They can't win in the play. Can't win the big one in the playoffs. Well, did you see who they had to play in the second round? I mean, these are powerhouses. These are really good teams. It's toss-ups. So I think it's much more important to regroup and get this thing done. Get the Central, get the West. Now, Vegas lost in overtime last night, so they get a point, but the magic number to win the West goes down a point. So they move a notch ahead.
By the way, how
now
about
11.
Colorado getting waxed at home last night? Jeez. Anybody get the license plate? Oh, yeah, it said Kopitar.
Goodness, Kopitar. What do you have, four?
Four. L.A. at seven.
I mean, he couldn't miss. He just kept – every time I looked up on the highlights, he's coming down the ice, boom, it's in. Just one after another. In that building, that building has been a house of horrors for the visiting teams, not named Nashville. Nashville's gone in there and won two, but, man.
Not for L.A.
So that was a big win. L.A. has had a very good road trip.
You think? Five
very
of
good
six
road trip.
At Minnesota, at Winnipeg, at Colorado, they took 5 points.
Winnipeg is 27-7-2 at home. Minnesota's 24-6-7 at home. Colorado's 25-10-2 at home.
That's a whole lot of
and
home
LA wins. LA's got 5 out of 6. That's pretty strong. LA's good road team. 22-13-4 on the road.
Mm-hmm. And they're very good in overtime.
So
as
it's
we know.
It's heating up. It's heating up. Who are the Predators going to play in the first round?
But I'm with you. That the most important thing is wrapping up the one seed in the West. Just getting home ice throughout the playoffs. Stanley Cup final, that would be nice, but the whole playoffs for the first three rounds, as long as you have home ice there, I think
that's what you want.
That is the goal.
And you've got some work to do, even though you still, you look at it, and hey, 8-point lead, 9 games to play.
By the way, Tampa gave up 6 goals last. I mean, look, they're good. Don't get me wrong. They're really good. But there's no guarantee, even if they win the President's Trophy, there's no guarantee they're getting there. They have warts, and by the way, they've been giving up a lot of goals lately. Now, they can score it well, too. And you do wonder, what will that look like in the playoffs? But didn't they win 7-6 last night?
They did. 7-6.
To a bad Islanders team?
But that is typical Islanders,
I know.
Though.
They give up a ton. Do they know how to rebound? Can you imagine if they were a basketball team, what they would be doing every practice? We're doing nothing but rebounds!
It's amazing. They cannot stop anybody.
They cannot stop anything.
They're fun.
You get like 5 or 6 whacks every shot because they can't get it out of the zone. Let's go to Zach in Franklin. Zach, what's up?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on this morning. 2 things real quick. First and foremost, I promised I was going to call you back. PK did score the first point of the game, technically, with the assist to Arvey. So I was just going to touch on that. And secondly, I'm really proud of the Predators, even after that loss, being down 5-1 at home, and they did not play like sore losers. They didn't throw dirty shots. They didn't do some of these things that I have been watching these other teams do to the Predators. Instead, as they have done most of the season, especially as of late, past couple months, when they get down a couple goals, they don't start playing like that. They just start grinding. They try to fight their way back into the game, and most times they do. Most times they fight their way back in the game. They had an unlucky goal going on them, and it just, it was kind of too far ahead, too far out of their reach. But I was really proud of them for not, trying to throw any dirty shots, and the unspoken rule in hockey that I don't really agree with myself personally. But I think it's playing like sore losers, and I'm happy our team didn't do that. They, they kept their class, and they took a beating, and they're going to rebound from this and be just fine. I'm sure at some point down the road, I'll come back home here to Nashville and I'll see a Pekka Rinnasaurus Rex exhibit at a museum downtown. I'm happy to still call them my team. They're gonna rebound and do just fine. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you, Zach. Yeah, good point. I mean, you didn't get all the nonsense that you get with some of the other teams that we've seen late in the game. Instead, what do? They're just trying to shorten the deficit. They did that. Scott Hartnell cut it to 5-2, and they just kept playing.
It's such a fine line. You end up getting beat soundly, and I agree with the caller. They didn't start playing dirty. They kept trying to score. They did get a goal. But think about the game. It's a shaky first period. You're down 1-0. They only had 4 shots on goal. They come out strong in the second period. They tie it up, and then they have a power play. And if you remember, Philip Forsberg hit a post, and then Ryan Johansson hit the crossbar. And, I mean, it was getting revved up like a lot of the home games. This is starting to look a lot like games we've seen all year long, where they turn it up a notch and basically that play starts buzzing and they run the team right out of the building. And I don't think they were going to run Toronto out of the building, but I thought it's going to settle in. This is going to be a great game. And if they go ahead 2-1 and the momentum goes even further, maybe it's a different game. But sort of when the backs were to the wall, that's when Matthews made that incredible play. They didn't have a whole lot going on, and all of a sudden that play happens out of nowhere. He makes it just a brilliant individual play. He's a special player. And
well, that minute 38 kind of sealed the game.
And then a minute 38, they score again. So that, and then you're thinking, okay, we've seen the Predators come back a lot in third periods, and then Mitch Marner comes in, makes another incredible individual play to start the third period.
Well,
put the hammer down.
You know what they were talking about in the other room.
Yeah. Hey, right. Let me show you. This team has come back how many times recently?
And what did we just do Tuesday in Tampa? We were up 3-1 going into the third, and we coughed it up. We gave up 3 goals. So we can't do that tonight. And obviously they came out and scored right away and ended that.
Ended that.
I kind of just, you kind of knew then. Okay.
So, take it. I was just looking at this. There's still meat on the bone here. Okay, the Predators, you can't put it in cruise control. That's the only thing that they have to emphasize here. They don't have to win every game, but to get the first seed in the West, it's looking like they're going to win. They need to win five more games. Minimum five. Now, you still, you know, you go...
Nine to go, got to win five.
If you win four, you know, it depends. If another team gets hot, it could get a little hairy to secure that one seed. So there's still work to do, and they're, as we've said, they play the second toughest schedule of anybody in the league down the stretch, and it starts with two Bears back to back. Minnesota, Winnipeg, this is a good test. So maybe that's, hopefully last night's the cold water in the face, and you get right back at it and get some points on this road trip.
And then they'll be back at home all next week to close out the month. Minnesota, San Jose, Buffalo.
Minnesota, San Jose.
Buffalo's the only one that's not a playoff team.
Right.
I mean, they're all playoff teams other than
Buffalo.
Buffalo. I guess Florida right now, are they on the outside?
They're on the outside. But
they're right there.
I think they're going to pass New Jersey, honestly.
Like they could.
I think they will.
Boy, you wonder. Wouldn't that be – New Jersey was very active at the deadline. They made those moves, and you're thinking, man. Can you imagine if they don't get
in? Right on the edge. They're going to be right on the edge.
Yeah.
What I don't know is, do New Jersey and Florida play each other head-to-head? Like Florida, Florida got waxed last night by Columbus, who's the hottest team in the league right now.
Yep.
They have now taken over Nashville. Now that Nashville has lost, Nashville is still pretty hot, I would say. 14-1-1 is pretty hot. But Columbus has now won, what, 10 straight?
Yep.
They're getting healthy. Anybody want to play them in the first round? Speaking of who could come out of the – I mean, if Bobrovsky has a great series, he's a guy that can just rise to the top. He can be as good as anybody. He hasn't yet in his career in a playoff series, or at least not recently, not for the Jackets. But he's a Vezina Trophy guy.
But who had the longest winning streak in the league last year?
The Blue Jackets.
Yeah, 16. How'd that work out? First round exit.
I know. Who was the 8th seed last year, though, in the West? Could they be the Predators in the East this year? I'd be talking about that if I were them.
I think the Eastern Conference is going to be fun to watch because it's going to be chaos. Kind of like March Madness.
How about that? But Florida State. Who had Florida State in the regional final? I mean, forget about the Cinderella, the traditional Loyola, but Florida State just, I don't want to say.
Well, how about Kansas State? I mean.
Kansas State's another great example.
Like who?
This is the argument, right, that a lot of people make. Why would you let the 8th place team, or wherever those teams finish, Kansas State probably finished, what, 7th? If you ranked the order
You're
of
talking about in the Big
how
12?
They got in the Big 12 and in the ACC, Kansas State's probably about the 6th or 7th team on the ladder in Florida in a 10-team league. And got
Kansas
in.
State finished 4th in the Big 12.
Oh, I'm not talking about win-loss record. I'm talking about power ranking. How would you rank them? Where would you put them on the ladder of power ranking?
Obviously,
in that
Kansas
league?
And Texas Tech are
Kansas,
ahead of
Texas
them.
Kansas, Texas Tech. Who else would we put?
TCU ahead of them?
Close, right? They beat TCU in the conference tournament. That helped them.
You're going to have them ahead of Oklahoma and Texas.
Got to have them. Well, but the.
You
That's
would have
where
them fourth,
yeah.
Like you, there's not anybody you can put ahead of them. They finished fourth in the Big 12.
I looked at their RPI was like 50 something. Florida State, same thing. I mean, clearly in both those teams were clearly in the tournament, but they were not teams that were catching a lot of national
nobody
headlines.
Nobody. Just say it. Nobody was talking about.
Yeah.
It. Nobody. Which good for them. I mean, they're in the Elite Eight. They now have a chance to go to the Final Four, and sure, that's what all of us had. Loyola, Chicago, and Kansas State. Yeah. We said it was going to be crazy.
Florida State won easy.
Easy. Not as easy as Michigan. By the way, SEC. Thanks for playing. Eight.
How
done.
Did Kentucky? Well, I mean, Kansas State, I guess we got to give them props, especially for being able to win in Atlanta.
Yeah.
It was just a sea of blue every time I looked up there. Wow.
It's a hell of a win for them, man. I guess that's what Coach Cal was talking about, the poison. Now they're going home. They drank the – you're a shoo-in now for the Final Four. Whoa, wait a minute. You got to beat Kansas State. Texas A&M gets waxed. I thought Texas A&M, honestly, I thought they were going to win.
What happened? They looked so
good. I loved the way they were playing. I was like, man, watch out.
Well, they were – they hit everything against North Carolina. Now, North Carolina, I didn't think they guarded very well. But they guarded Texas A&M how you should guard them, right? You have to try to – you got to collapse down on the big guys, and you got to force Texas A&M to hit outside shots, but they hit them. They kept hitting them.
I thought they were
going
to
be – and North Carolina could not buy one from the outside. I just kept thinking, hit a couple threes in a row, get a run going. We've seen comebacks in this tournament. The TV timeouts take forever, so you can – there's plenty of times to start a little run, and it just never happened. It was a bad dream.
Mm. We will come back, and we will switch gears. We'll talk to Cameron Wolf, ESPN's – Titans reporter. We'll talk to Cameron next on 102.5 The Game. Titans will unveil their new unis here at the beginning of next month, which is just around the corner. Let's find out if our next guest has taken a sneak peek. Cameron Wolf covers the team for ESPN, Titans reporter. Cameron, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Are you ready to break some news today? You've seen the uniforms, and they look like what?
I'll go with Taylor Lewan's reference. They're pink, huh?
They're pink. Wow. So you believe it. They're pink.
No. I don't have that juice to see the uniforms early. I'm waiting just like y'all are.
Okay. What are you anticipating? Do you think we will be excited, we'll give the big thumbs up, or do you think we'll go, oh, man, all this about that? What do you think? What's your gut telling you?
I think folks will be excited. I mean, they're making a big party of it. So, you know, hopefully it's not a letdown. I know there's supposed to be, you know, noticeable changes. So, you know, it's just going to be personal opinion whether you like them or not. But I think it's a good new feel to the team, regardless of, you know, what the color changes are or what the material changes are. I think it'll be a positive. You know, we'll all judge, you know, the fashion of it. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it's hard to mess up, you know, a change too much, I think. You know, crossing fingers, but I think so.
Yeah, you're right. Crossing fingers, we'll see. You put the details out on Sylvester Williams, his new deal with the Lions. Why don't you think it worked here? I mean, they obviously thought it was going to work here. They paid him well for it to work here. Why don't you think it worked here?
I think they thought he was going to be first, it took him a while to adjust to what they were doing. He came from a system in Denver where there were a lot of playmakers on that defensive line edge. So it allowed him to make a little bit more one-on-one plays. And here I think they hoped that he would sort of emerge into a guy who could make a little bit more plays himself. And as we saw last season, he wasn't really a splash play guy. He didn't play well maybe the first month or two season, and I thought he played better towards the end of the year. And I talked to a couple coaches on the previous staff who thought that this offseason would be really good, and they thought they would see more out of him here in year two. But you bring in a new scheme, you bring in a new coach and style, and they obviously weren't satisfied with what they were getting out of him. They thought they could upgrade at the position. He plays a position where you only see him playing maybe 30-40% of the snaps. So you have to ask yourself, is he worth the money? He had a roster bonus due of like $2.5 million last weekend. So that's a big payment for a guy if you're not sure about him. So I think that all that went into consideration. And, you know, obviously, you know, whether or not they get the Ndamukong Suh is also a part of that too. So, you know, I think that they felt it was time to move on, and Sly thought that he was fine with the move, and he got a, you know, halfway decent deal with Detroit. So We'll see how he does out there, but it just didn't work out in Tennessee. That happens sometimes.
Yeah, you kind of led me into my next gut question. I feel like all my questions are, Cameron, what's your gut telling you? So they get rid of Sylvester Williams, they get rid of Carl Klug, and you could see, okay, they're obviously they have their eye on a bigger prize, and we know the bigger prize. You just mentioned him. So what's your gut? I mean, who do you think has, if you were to rank the teams right now, where do you think the Titans fall for Ndamukong Suh?
Well, first, I hope he makes his decision by, you know, draft time. It feels like a recruiting trip that he's going on this last week or so. But I think if I had to rank them, I'd probably say Rams, Titans, Saints in that order. I think the Rams, the vibe I'm getting is that the Rams may appeal to him more from the football side of it as far as playing with Aaron Donald, playing with some of the cornerbacks they added this offseason, playing for Wade Phillips, who – I had spent 2 years with him. He's a great guy. He's a great guy to play for. So I could definitely understand that. And feeling like that's probably the team that gives him the best chance to win a championship in next season. But then if his priorities are money, the Titans can obviously offer the most money. They have $44 million in cap space. They're probably the team that can offer him the most long-term security based on him potentially being the face of that defense. And they've got a pretty good team themselves. So I'd say it's Rams or Titans would be my thought, and then the Saints sort of at third place. I would be pretty surprised if he ended up with them. The only thing that they pretty much can offer is, you know, a competitive team and the ability to play in that 4-3 scheme again. So, yeah, that would be sort of how I look at it going into his decision.
I thought with him canceling the visit to the Raiders, maybe the decision was coming really soon. Do you think a decision is coming really soon?
Well, I think so, but you never know with Sue. He's sort of a guy who does things his own way.
Yes.
It's hard to predict. He's a little – I've talked to a couple of people who, you know, covered him and know him and just said, hey, he's kind of a weird guy, to be honest. He's sort of on his own. He's sort of a, you know, go by his own rules. So, yeah, I think that, you know, you visit teams – you visit teams early this week and over the weekend that you'd make a decision, you know, within a week and not drag it out. But who knows, you know, I think today would make sense as a day. But if he doesn't make it today, you know, maybe it drags into next week. At some point you think the teams have to say, all right, man, we've got to move on and make our contingency decisions. So let us know. But right now it doesn't seem like he's been given any ultimatum.
I've heaped a lot of praise toward John Robinson's way on everything he's done since he's been here. But one of the things I have not praised him about is the backup quarterback situation. I think it's been botched. It was botched last year, this time last year. Nothing against Matt Castle. Nice dude. Great in the room, but just wasn't capable of winning them games when Mariota, if he has to miss. And right now we've seen he has to miss at some point in a season. Well, they've done the right move now, and they've moved on. But now I'm sitting here going, I'm not sure where they're going with this backup quarterback situation. Then you get the Johnny Manziel story out in San Diego. Cameron, where are they going to replace Matt Castle? I mean, you look at the list and you're going, my God, Blaine Gabbert looks like the most attractive thing out there. And if that's the most attractive thing out there, I ask you again, what are they doing with the backup quarterback situation?
Yeah, it's not very inspiring. I also think that was a big issue. I think, you know, that cost them a game and a chance to win the division last season in Miami. And you can't go into this season with the same type of issue. You know, honestly, and I know it's, you know, not the popular, you know, sort of a controversial stance, but I think obviously Colin Kaepernick is the best option for them as far as a backup quarterback. I don't think they'll go down that road. It's not, you know, it's not something they've showed any interest in. The Johnny Manziel thing, I think that's more of a headline than anything. I don't think that there's much legitimate stance to that either. But, yeah, I mean, I know they had Blaine Gabbert in here for a visit. They had Chad Henne in here earlier, and he went to Kansas City. None of those guys really do much for me. Of all the guys that are available and that the Titans would actually, you know, consider signing, Matt Moore is probably the guy that makes the most sense for me.
That's what I
said, I haven't seen them show any interest in him either. I don't know. It doesn't seem like any of these guys will really be your backup quarterback, you know, reliever, as Mike Vrabel called it, the guy who can come in and win you a couple games if you need it. So, you know, I think they end up signing one of these guys and then maybe draft a guy to develop and potentially be a long-term backup too and just hold three on the roster. But, yeah, I agree with you that the issue is still an issue, and that's not a great issue to have with a quarterback who hasn't played 16 games in the season yet.
We're talking to Cameron Wolf, ESPN staff writer, covers the Tennessee Titans, does an outstanding job. Cameron, tell us about this guard that they signed and maybe how he fits into the strategy to try to upgrade the interior of the offensive line.
Yeah, he's a John Robinson guy. He was a guy that they drafted when he was a part of the front office of Tampa Bay. So he knows him well. The best skill set he has is his versatility. He's a guy who could play all five positions on the line. The question then becomes, can he play them well? And that's sort of where things get a little bit iffy. You know, he's probably a guy who fits better as a more of a, six-man offensive lineman, a guy who can spot in at any time, a guy who can give you a few starts if the guy's injured. But he hasn't really done a lot to show he can be a full-time starter at guard, which is his main position. So I anticipate him probably starting with Quinn, competing to start with Quinn Spain, who they haven't shown a lot of love to this offseason, and then seeing what happens there. Maybe they add another draft pick too. And then if he doesn't win that job, maybe being sort of the swing guard or swing tackle along with Dennis Kelly.
So you would expect them to draft a guard to throw into the mix to try to, if nothing else, groom somebody down the road?
Yeah, I'd imagine like a guard or center, you know, that type of prospect. Like I mentioned, I don't think that Quinn Spain is in their long-term plans. He doesn't really fit with what they're trying to do in the zone scheme, and they tendered him a low offer. He hasn't got much interest on the free agency market as a restricted free agent, so it seems like he'll be back. But I think they're probably still going to try to find a long-term option at the guard spot opposite of Josh Klein. So I don't know. They signed this guy, Paflin, to a one-year deal. Spain's on a one-year deal, so neither of those guys appear to be the long-term answer. So I do think that it would make sense for them to draft a guard to compete and potentially be that long-term answer at guard too. So still a lot of offseason to go, but I think this is, you know, more of a depth move that could help them down the line than a guy who can be their long-term starter.
Okay, Cameron, your opinion on the Kevin Byard, Deion Sanders deal. We've had some fun with it, as you can imagine, on the show. Darren has the T-shirt all picked out. What's the T-shirt, Darren?
The T-shirt that Kevin Byard should wear under his uni all next year and take it off after the game and walk around the field for fans to take pictures. Kevin Byard, just a fan.
So, Cameron, these guys have sold me. At first, I was like, why get into the – don't get into the Twitter war. It's never anything good. I'm thinking Herm Edwards, don't press send. But I do think it could raise Kevin Byard's profile a little bit and actually get him a little recognition, get the fans going a little bit more. Those are not bad things.
Oh, absolutely. You look at a guy like Kevin, I talked to him, I called him on Wednesday morning, and I'm like, dog, Deion's not giving you any love. and he's like, man, I was shocked, just like you. You know, obviously, Deion's a guy that all these guys look up to, but you've got pride. A guy calls you a fan after you get an all-pro season. That's a slap in the face. So he definitely wasn't happy about it. He felt like it was a sign of disrespect, you know, just being sort of who he was and the profile that he's come from. You know, sort of being a guy who hasn't been on a lot of people's radars. Obviously, this will get him some attention. There's been plenty of stories written, you know, to get his name in the spotlight. The people who didn't know who Kevin Byard is, more of them know now. And, you know, it's up to him to put up an encore. I know he's been working like five times a week out training with a lot of the DBs. So he's ready to not let that be a one-year wonder. And if he, you know, bounces back with another year like he did last season, then, you know, it'll be hard for Deion not to know who he is or call him a fan anymore.
Yeah. I still don't believe that he knew. I know everybody,
yeah,
it's divided.
So
I don't believe he knew.
I don't think he did.
But, I think there was a whoops afterwards when Kevin Byard brought it to his attention, but I think initially,
right,
I don't think he knew who he was.
Right. Yeah, I don't think either. I mean, and it's sort of a condemnation on him being an analyst at NFL Network. You've got to know exactly what you're doing on social media, and then you've got to also know everything that's going on in the league. So, you know, it is what it is. It's sort of a Twitter drama, but it's something that I'm sure Kevin will use. And like you mentioned, I wouldn't be surprised to see him slide it in, whether it's a media interview or whether it's, you know, a T-shirt, just a reference that he still remembers. you know, the slight.
Sometimes it's fun, I think, for a player to have that drives you, but also the fans can rally around that. The Titans fans need something like that. Remember, you know, Mike Milbury for the Predators became the guy that the fans love to rally around PK Subban.
Sure.
I think that the Titans could do that in a very similar fashion with their fans. It definitely creates the energy. That lack of respect card, it kind of gets the hair on the back of your neck going, right?
Yeah, absolutely, especially coming from a small market. And this stuff guys talk about all the time. He mentioned it. Delanie Walker mentioned it on a rant last season. You know, Tennessee's not the biggest market. It takes a lot for them to get national attention. So, you know, for this sort of thing to happen, it gets you in national attention. It gets you in the spotlight. And it also lets you play that card a little bit more as you go along and lets you, you know, continue to be motivated that, hey, these guys aren't paying attention to us even though we did this, this, and this.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think it's something the fans can rally around, the team can rally around. I don't really see any negatives about it. It's the off season, you know, nobody's really, you know, stressing too much about it. But it's something that'll, you know, get eyes on you when it matters.
No doubt. Cameron, good stuff. Appreciate it as always. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Cameron Wolf, go read his stuff on ESPN, Titans reporter. Appreciate him joining us as always. Back to wrap up the first hour next. You just made the list coming up at noon. You'll have a great prize. Make sure you jump in and get involved at noon. Get something off your chest. Who or what is on your list? Next hour, we're going to touch on what's going on east of here. Man, some crazy, wild and wacky stories coming out surrounding UT and John Curry and Chip Kelly and Greg Schiano and Dan Walken and all kinds of good stuff. We'll get into that next hour. Willie, you heard us talk about the backup quarterback situation. You heard him say Colin Kaepernick, and you perked up. So I'm going to ask you, just because we've gone over this list, and this list, let's just be honest, it's yuck. It's going from one warm body to another warm body. And I hate to say that about Matt Castle because he's a nice guy, but he was a warm body. I mean, he just didn't have anything left in the tank. And this other list looks like warm bodies. That's all they are. So is the best option truly a rehab project in Johnny Manziel or Colin Kaepernick, a guy who hasn't played, I think, in 2 years?
Is somebody going to sign Manziel? That's a question I have. If somebody signs Manziel, then you cannot tell me that nobody wants to touch Colin Kaepernick. Now, this is what I don't know. Is Colin Kaepernick in shape? Like, why is he putting out? I'd love to see him just put out a, hey, I'm in shape. I'm working out. Anybody wants to show up, be at this field on this date, just like Manziel. So why hasn't he done that? That's what I don't know. Like, before I really go into the charge of Kaepernick is better than these
what
guys.
What if he is? Let's just say what if he is.
If he's in shape to
what
play.
What if he's working out? Yeah.
Then I honestly do not know. And especially if he's saying, I will be a backup quarterback. I just want a job. Then, to me, it's obvious that
dare
he should
be. Dare
you
say no-brainer?
Yes. And this is nothing new for me. I've been saying I was saying it last year. But, I mean, I get all the issues, but now we've moved on to a new chapter here where I don't think he's sitting there going, I want to be a starter, I want to make a certain amount of money, anything like that. If he is just out there like Manziel, who basically is just saying, somebody sign me, I just want a chance. He's done so much more than most of these guys that are still on the list. Right? Geno Smith and Matt Moore and all these guys, come on. It's not even close. I mean, he's not great, right? He's not – nobody's asking him to go win you a Super Bowl. You're just asking
any of the other options, right?
And I do think there would be an uproar and there would be people that say, I'm not going to the games anymore. You know that would happen, right? You'd have some people that would say, I'm done. I'm not going to the games. You'd have to deal with that for a while. But I think in time, you would move forward from that. If he, you know, you'd certainly have to have a talk with him. Just like when Michael Vick came back into the league, they had to be prepared to deal with that. But Michael Vick ended up being a pretty good backup for a while, right? He was a useful player in the league after the whole jail dogfighting thing. He made it past that, and at some point, he continued to play. Was it always a mark, always something you thought about with Michael Vick? Sure.
But he wanted to repair his image. He wanted to.
Right.
Now, we don't know what Colin Kaepernick's stance is. We don't know how we're going on the assumption right now that he wants to be a backup. He wants to be back in the league. He wants to.
Right, and that's what I don't know. It's a mystery.
We don't know if there's any of that.
That's what I don't know. But Michael Vick was able to recover from a 100%, hey, he was dogfighting, we all love animals, he went to jail. You know, that was a 100% no-brainer. At least it, Colin Kaepernick, it's divided. It's not like 100% of the people are against what he did. Some people even admire what he did, dare I say. I know a lot of people are strongly against it. We went through that whole thing, right?
We did.
It's just a mystery to me. Especially if you're going to hire Johnny Manziel. That guy's got issues. Now, it remains to be seen. Somebody going to hire him?
What if he's changed his life around like he says he has? What if he truly wants to be a quarterback?
I think
a backup quarterback.
I think
whatever
society,
the role may be.
Society can be forgiving if you handle it the right way.
Sure. We've got plenty of proof of that. There's example after example after example, but it has to come within. It has to start with the person first. They have to be willing to embrace everything that comes with that. I don't know if Johnny Manziel is. He's right now acting like he is. I don't know if Colin Kaepernick, what's his mindset right now, but I do know this. When we look at the list that's left of warm bodies,
the pickings
they
are
don't
meager.
Look so bad.
The pickings are meager.
I mean,
and as we have said,
it is leftovers.
And it's an important job. The backup quarterback on your team is an important job. There's a lot to consider.
Well, yeah, considering what we've talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, Mariota has not proven that he can stay healthy for 16 games. And if you're going to need a quarterback for a game or two or even three or whatever the case may be, we saw it last year play out and how important. Not everybody can strike gold with their backups.
But
we get that.
Have you not thought, though, that, okay, why on with all the coverage of the NFL we have, take aside the NFL network that has 24 hours a day to talk about this, but even on ESPN that is still going to spend a huge amount of time talking about the free agency period and everything, has nobody gone and asked Adam Schefter or any of these reporters, has nobody gone to the Colin Kaepernick camp and found out what is happening? Like, I'm waiting for a feature on SportsCenter that says he's done. He's not working out. He has moved on, doesn't want to play anymore, right? Wouldn't you think that would be on one of these days, the SportsCenter ticker
maybe
or
something?
Maybe
that's the answer, though. Maybe they've tried.
But nobody's asked.
How do you know?
Because that should be a story. Colin Kaepernick is not interested in playing anymore. Or Colin Kaepernick is working out and nobody's calling him. It's one or the other, right?
Fair. Yeah, I guess you're right. I don't know why it's not been a story, especially in the offseason when they're looking for stories.
That's exactly.
Out there.
People, 13 teams went to see Johnny Manziel play. He's been horrible when he's been in the league.
Yeah, well, he beat the Titans.
He did.
Dare I say that.
So did Ryan Leaf.
We don't want to get into that list. Guys, so did Patrick Ramsey.
Patrick Ramsey beat the Titans.
It's been several Vikings quarterbacks we all forgot, too, that –
yeah.
One.
Todd Bauman.
I was getting ready to say Todd Bauman.
But hey.
I was like, you don't want to go down that list.
So I would like to know that. I think they would be interested in, now I know people are fatigued, right, about the whole thing.
I'll tell you what,
but it's a story.
If you want news,
when you look at backup quarterbacks, it has to cross your mind. But if he doesn't want to play, then that's that. Got to move on. You got to go with the list that's there.
To answer your question, yes, I am surprised that somebody hasn't come out with
they spend
something.
All day. They
that's
they
all
have
they
the
do.
Whole,
right? They
right.
still
that's
do
all
an
they
NFL
do.
live.
Adam
show.
Schefter is doing stories.
Yeah,
Chris Morton's doing stories. I'd just like to know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll come back. Hour number two. We'll head east. We'll find out a little bit more about this story coming out of Knoxville. We'll do that next on 102.5 The Game.